Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy.
We rode the elevator down. Deck 18 is a lot bigger than the other decks. It's more like decks 18 through 22, just without the floors or ceilings in between. Crazy shit goes down on deck 18, or day 18 as the locals call it. It's just one deck above the refinery level. It was once a maintenance deck, so crews could move about above the refinery equipment and drop down just to the spots that needed repair. As such, it doesn't have the best ventilation, noise baffling, or general safety features built into deck 17 through 1. Deck 18 wasn't even meant for habitation. 15 years ago, just about the time I got here, I think, a big tax bill funded construction of maintenance pods that cling below the refinery deck. Safer for maintenance crews and more mobile, they made a big difference in the equipment uptime and wound up making New Hoboken more profitable. As Carney Powers would say, everybody won. Since Deck 18 wasn't needed for maintenance and it wasn't up to code for habitation, it was left vacant. It didn't stay vacant for long. The New Hoboken's rejects, the people who couldn't afford a place to live, the people who couldn't find an above-board job, the junkies and the vagrants and the bums and the hookers who made the Deck 17 working girls look like movie stars, they slowly drifted down to Day 18 and stayed there. Know how on planets gravity makes all the silt and detritus sink to the bottom of the ocean? Yeah, that's Deck 18. The cops didn't like to go to Deck 17. As for Deck 18, they just pretended like it didn't exist at all. Deck 18, that wretched hive of scum and villainy, happened to be the abode of a man they call the Magician. No one knew his real name. Some thought he couldn't possibly have a real name because he'd conjured himself out of thin air. People who believe that magic is real are fucking retards. There's a lot of retards on New Ho.
"Maybe we should just bail," Brock said. "We could take the next shuttle out, maybe head for Uranus."
"Isn't that Carney's job?"
"Know what, Rabbi? Sometimes you're kind of a dick."
That was true. When I get stressed, I start ripping on people. "Sorry, Big Ugly. Look, if we have to leave, what do we do then? What do we do for money?" He shrugged.
"Well, I can get fights. You can be my manager."
"Which is a great idea, except we're running from Chad Littilton. Your name up in lights might make it easier for him to know where we are." Brock thought for a second, then nodded.
"Yeah, I guess you're right."
"We have to talk to the Magician," I said. "We can either see him now or run and maybe see him later. That's a kind of seeing him later that neither of us wants." Brock actually shuddered. He shuddered.
"Yeah," he said. "I don't want a sorcerer coming after me."
"He's not a sorcerer. He's a magician."
"What's the difference?"
"A sorcerer is a mythological construct created by primitive cultures to explain inexplicable phenomenon. A magician is a guy who fucks with your head." Brock shuddered again.
"Well, I've had just about enough of being fucked today. Thank you very much."
The elevator hit bottom. Maybe that actually was the metaphor. "You ready, Brock?" He shook his head.
"No, but let's go. I just hope this guy doesn't turn me into a frog.
The doors opened into a dungeon of metal, steam, rust, and the stink of humanity. What lights there were didn't illuminate things all that well. Most of the people down here had spent their lives getting the shit kicked out of them. So when they saw a guy of Brock size, they slid into the shadows and got the hell out of the way. In those shadows, we saw movement. People were watching us. We saw some people standing, some people lying prone, and sometimes both. There were stories that some kind of cannibals lived down there. I thought that just a rumor, but I'd also thought Pomeranians shitting on foreheads was a rumor. I really didn't want to find out the truth about the cannibals. We walked quickly down a central road that hadn't seen a tram in a decade and a half. Day 18 didn't have the stalls and shop fronts like the other decks did. Here, there was old machinery, some of it half rusted out and reaching 30 feet above. Deep shadows ran between those abandoned machines. Hopefully, we could stick to the main road.
How far? Brock asked.
It's supposed to be only 200 feet to the left from the main shaft.
What's it look like?
We'll know it, I said. I'm told you can't miss the place. 200 feet later, I understood what that meant. There was a goddamn circus tent made of red and white striped velvet, spotted with black mold, frayed yellow ropes, and limp purple banners hanging from painted poles. Some of the ropes were tied to old machines, making the place look like the hybrid offspring of an old Earth gypsy colony and a decommissioned war bond.
Wow, Brock said. This sure looks like where a sorcerer would do sorcification, Rabbi.
I walked to the front flap and gently pushed it aside. For some reason, I'd expected guards. The same kind of heavies that protected the entrance to Chadla Tilton's dance club. But there was no one. Inside, we saw stuff lining the tent's edges. Cages, shackles, blocks of wood maybe made to hold people in place. A big circle with the outline of a body and knives sticking out of it. All kinds of shit like that. The place smelled like the bottom of a wet shoe, if that shoe were made out of cake. In the middle of this tent sat a throne that seemed to be made out of knives. A man sat on that throne. The metal chair should have cut him to pieces, but it didn't seem to bother him in the least. Fake candles flickered around him. He was waiting for us.
Rabbit Rabbi, he said, and Big Ugly Sockman.
I nodded.
Magician?
Huh.
Brock said to the man.
I thought you'd be bigger.
The magician smiled.
Funny, I never heard that before.
Truth be told, I also thought the guy would be bigger. Hell, I was bigger than he was, and that's saying something. He had short blonde hair, done up in spikes, skinny, in combat boots, jeans, and a t-shirt. The magician didn't look like anything special. His looks, however, weren't part of what made his reputation. The magician wasn't the only hitman on New Ho. Not even close. There were a lot of bad motherfuckers among the 500,000 people on this station. And there was enough criminal infighting to keep these hitmen gainfully employed. This guy, however, he was a cut above the rest. In a station that had no guns, you had to get up close and personal to take someone out. That, or how to know to deliver poison, how to rig a lethal but low-yield bomb, or how to arrange an elevator accident or decompression event. Supposedly, the magician knew how to do all of these things. And this was the man I had to deal with? At times like that, I wished real hard that I'd just been a little bit better as a fighter. A couple of big-ticket wins, some money in the bank, and I would have never wound up here. Yet, here I was.
Magician, we need to talk, I said. The president hired you to kill Ellen DeGeneres Jr., didn't he?
The magician paused before answering.
I can neither confirm nor deny that information, Senator, Brock looked at me.
You're a senator?
Figure speech, I said to him. Then, to the magician, I said, we came for the president's money. The magician laughed.
Did you now? Let's say that I hypothetically accepted payment to do this dastardly deed. Someone in that line of work, I imagine, would be bound by reputation to fulfill the terms of any agreement.
You can't fulfill it anymore, I said. The president is dead. He nodded.
You think I wouldn't have heard about that already? Come on, Rabbi, use your head.
He already knew?
Well, then you know that Ellen DeGeneres Jr. moved faster than you did. She had the president whacked before you could whack her. Khan wanted her dead so he could win the election as president of the NHARP.
I heard Brock sigh, and this time it wasn't a sigh of despondence. For the first time that day, he was getting pissed.
Just give us the fucking money, you little shit, he said. You have 3 seconds, then I'm coming over there and twisting your little head off your little neck. One.
The magician flicked his arm forward. There was a clank as a metal spike appeared between Brock's feet. The spike pointed back at an angle to the magician's knife chair. I saw that the chair now lacked symmetry. There was one extra decorative spike on the left than there was on the right. Brock looked at the spike between his feet.
Sockman, I said. Maybe this wasn't the right time for you to practice your intimidating look.
He nodded.
Maybe not. That's kind of impressive, Rabbi. I'm actually kind of disappointed.
In?
I thought sorcerers used those clouds of smoke and shit.
The magician was tossing another spike back and forth from his left hand to his right.
I'm sorry, Big Ugly. Did I interrupt your count? I believe you were on, too.
Brock looked up.
Was I? I was never good at math, Mr. Magician. I don't recall ever being able to count higher than one.
The magician nodded.
A man's got to know his limitations. So, Rabbi, what's to stop me from just keeping the money?
The answer was nothing. But I had to try and appeal to whatever morals remained inside of a man who murdered people for money.
You took those funds as payment for a service rendered, I said. That service was to help John Khan get reelected as president. Last I checked, they don't elect dead men, at least on Nuho.
I hear dead people can still vote in Chicago, back on Earth.
Voter fraud, the magician said.
Such a crime.
Anyway, no matter whom you might kill, hypothetically, of course, you can't fulfill the service for which you were hired. So it seems logical to refund the money.
Refund it to you? It's not your money. Now, I finally got to play my ace in the hole. You're right. It's not ours. It's Chad Latilton's. For the first time, I saw the magician's confidence waver. Maybe he ruled down here in a den of deviants and misfits, but Chad Latilton ran the other 17 decks. This wasn't a battle the magician wanted. He started spinning the spike in one hand, like a drummer spins a drumstick. The twirling, flashing metal dancing between his fingers was damn near hypnotic.
And how would Latilton find out I have the money?
Because Brock and I would tell him. The magician smiled.
And if you and Brock died right here in this tent, hypothetically, of course, then who would tell him?
I had ducked thousands of punches in my day. Could I duck a spike? I felt sweat pooling in my armpits and dripping down my balls. Brock and I could turn and run, but one of us, at least, would be hit before we made it back to the tent entrance. We could rush the guy, but he was sitting on a fucking chair made of knives. Somehow, I don't think we'd get to him fast enough.
times like these, I really hate New Hoboken's gun control laws.
You'll know, magician, I said. That's for starters, and we didn't just get this information out of thin air. Whether Brock and I live or not, word will get back to Letilton. Wouldn't it make more sense for us to take the money back to him, along with your best wishes?
The spike stopped spinning. The magician's smile faded. I wondered if he had that same look on his face right before he killed someone.
You're right, he said. It's good for business that Mr. Letilton knows of my respect. Rabbi, I trust you'll make sure he knows my feelings on the issue.
I nodded.
Good, the magician said. And now, Brock Sockman, I have something for you.
I heard Brock swallow.
I still haven't counted past one, if that's what you mean.
The magician smiled.
I appreciate your selective memory, but that's not it. I want you to remember something. Just because your friends don't believe in magic, that doesn't mean magic isn't real.
The magician's hand whipped down and a flashing cloud of smoke engulfed his throne. The flash made me blink, only for a second, but that was long enough. The smoke started to dissipate. The magician was gone. The throne was empty, save for a briefcase balancing on the points of a dozen knives. Brock squinted at the chair.
He turned himself into a briefcase?
I sighed as I walked to the chair of knives. Brock, sometimes you're a fucking idiot. It had been a long afternoon, but as I opened the briefcase to see the stacks of money inside, I finally entertained a hope that my life might end without a tiny pile of poo on my forehead. Boogie down. Whatever drugs Chad Letilton and his whores used, it had to be good stuff. Did that guy ever stop dancing?
Rabbi! He screamed as we walked through the iron door. Ew! Is that a briefcase I see in your hand? My man, get your white ass over here!
Brock and I complied. Brock was already bobbing his head and dipping his right shoulder to the beat. At least Shecky's body was gone. We walked onto the dance floor. I offered the briefcase.
Here you go, Mr. Letilton.
Ooh, set that shit down, boy, he said.
He was doing some kind of dance that moved his feet in little back and forth steps, his loose fists held up near rolling shoulders.
I'll count it later. I assume it's all there.
Oh, but my 10%, I said. And there's no interest. We retrieved the principal amount. Unless you expect me to hack into the president's bank account for the rest, that's all there is. Tilton looked up to the ceiling, thinking, his fists and feet never slowing.
That shit is still your fault, Rabbi. You didn't bring back the interest. That means you owe me.
Great. Just what every kid wants, to be in the pocket of Chad Letilton. That shuttle to Uranus was sounding better every minute. How can I make it up to you, Mr. Letilton? How can we square things?
He smiled.
You just have to do another job for me, Rabbi. And this time, maybe you'll be more punctual about it.
I looked at Brock, who wasn't even listening. He was doing the same shoulder-rolling dance.
Big Ugly loved a boogie.
What choice did I have? In case you're keeping score at home, the choices were A, no choice, B, no choice, C, no choice, and D, all of the above. I closed my eyes. Nothing I could do now but hope I could pull off the next job.
Yes, sir, Mr. Letilton. What's the gig?
Ooh. I need you to talk to someone for me, Rabbi. Bring her around to my way of thinking, so to speak. I need you to have a nice conversation with Ellen DeGeneres Jr. But for now, I think you should dance.
I had to talk
to Ellen DeGeneres Jr., the current president of the NHARP, the woman who had people killed with plastic grapes? Well, fuck.
Littleton stopped moving. He looked angry. He pointed at me.
Dance, motherfucker! Dance, I said! Ooh!
I danced. I had a feeling I'd be dancing to Littleton's tune for a long, long time.
You have been listening to The Bones Are White serialized short story audiobook written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity.
I am a creeping cancer. Rots you to the core. Pumping through your blackened heart. Seduction of your soul. Separation of your senses. Sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun. On your knees, kiss the screen. Greed.
I don't hate you. Yeah. Or your rotten cones. My compulsion to feed the great machine. Cause I hate them.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.